Episodes that follow, we will share candid discussions on aging and hear from the experts. We are here to inform and encourage as we experience, well, aging.
The Power of Nine rule is a list of things that people who live in blue zones do that positively affect longevity. They were first published in Dan Buter's book, The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from People Who Lived the Longest. In this episode, we discuss the Power of Nine and how they play a role in aging well.
Dr. Armstrong, are you familiar with the Blue Zone and the Power Nine?
I am.
Yeah, so I came across an article in GQ.
I didn't take you for the GQ kind of guy.
Well, anyhow, the article was titled, "The Longest Living People in the World All Abide by the Power Nine Rule." And I thought it might be an interesting conversation for the Aging Well podcast.
Sounds great. What are the Power Nine?
Well, the Power Nine are things that the five places that have the highest proportion of people who've reached 100 and what they all have in common. These are move naturally, say yes to happy hour, take time to downshift, give your diet a plant shift, find your crew, abide by the 80% rule, put your loved ones first, find a place you belong, and know your why.
So move naturally, I take it they mean be physically active?
Yeah, be physically active. So the article actually links to a study that shows that sedentary behaviors like sitting for 13 hours a day or walking less than 4,000 steps per day can reduce the metabolic benefits of acute exercise. With occasional activity, this could help reduce post-meal insulin levels. And then it goes on to show that the researchers even found that the soleus push-ups, the calf raise for the majority of us, done in a sitting position, have been shown to fuel metabolism for hours. In other words, you really don't need to set aside 90 minutes every day for exercise day after day after day. They call it exercise snacks.
Yeah, we talk about exercise snacking quite a bit. And just to, you know, again, being active, high frequency of exercise. There's not anything specific in there. And I think in the blue zones, most of that is not really even specific exercise. It's just simply physical activity. And so what are some of the ways that we can find to get more physically active? Just including more time walking the stairs or walking around our neighborhood, walking the dog, doing all the different things that are really just easy to kind of implement into our lives.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, it can be as simple as parking a little further away when you're going to the grocery store or anything to that effect, right? So it's just adding those extra steps in. Say yes to happy hour. We've talked about alcohol consumption in previous episodes, particularly in episode 68. Are they saying that we should be consuming alcohol to age well?
Actually, they kind of do. It's interesting that, you know, that is what they're promoting. But it's not so much the alcohol itself is what the original work talks about. It's more that it's the relationship surrounding the alcohol consumption. And we've talked in the past about alcohol, and we've talked about how, you know, there's a bit of a J-curve when it comes to alcohol consumption and the overall health. And it's really a push toward moderation if any alcohol is consumed at all.
Yeah, I think the article kind of says, although there's a load of research praising the benefits of ditching alcohol altogether, a glass of wine is praised in the blue zone. It does talk about the social benefits, obviously, of going out with your friends and bringing in that longevity of the cultures and stuff. So I don't know. I think it's interesting. Obviously, we've talked about moderation as far as alcohol consumption goes. I think that we don't really need alcohol, especially since I'm going on my whole sober journey myself. And, but you know what, to each their own. If this is one of the things that makes people live to be over 100, then I guess it's, the information's out there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the point is alcohol is not bad in moderation unless it is bad for you. And for some people, physiologically, it's not appropriate for them. Maybe even psychologically, when we, you know, how we define what addiction might be. But, you know, when consumed in small quantities, and when we consider the types of alcohol that are drank, and really the environment in which it is drank, is probably the most important. I mean, sitting at the bar drinking by yourself after work is not healthy. Sitting around with a community of friends or family, having conversation, sharing your day. I've talked about my 15-minute check-in with my wife that we do as often as we can. Generally, our goal is to do it every day. We're going to sit down, maybe have a glass of wine, a beer, maybe a glass of whiskey or something like that. But it's the social connectedness that goes with it, and not so much that the health benefit is coming from the alcohol. Although from a physiological standpoint, there is some evidence that the effects of a low dose of alcohol is going to have positive physiological benefits, similar to a bout of exercise. But again, there's so many reasons to say it's not replacing the exercise.
You know, now that you mention it, when I was working at the assisted living, the individuals that were living to be in their, you know, late 90s or early 100s, whenever people would ask them questions on, you know, how do you live so long? What's the secret to living so long? Some of them would respond with, "Oh, I love my Jack Daniels," or, "Oh, you got to drink more. it pickles you." And so, in fact, one of the gentlemen in his medical chart, he took a shot of Wild Turkey every night. That was a part of his routine. That was actually in there. So I don't know. Maybe there is something to the longevity of it. Maybe.
What does the article mean by take time to downshift?
Well, the article doesn't say a lot, but it appears to be referring to stress management. Winding down, I guess.
So we talk a lot about sleep and sleep habits. I think a lot of what they're saying here with winding down is doing things kind of at the end of your day to bring those cortisol levels down, to prepare ourselves for better sleep, you know, doing the things that are going to alleviate some of that stress, you know, not dwelling on the stress, maybe journaling, getting a little bit of maybe meditation in. Again, that glass of alcohol may have a positive effect toward winding down a little bit after the day. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate for, you know, taking some time for yourself and just de-stressing, you know, especially when you're burning the candle, you're burning the wicks at both end, and you just become so physically, mentally, and emotionally exhausted. It's always good to just, okay, just relax, breathe, take some you time, treat yourself, you know, do whatever you need to do to kind of relax and reset the battery and recharge yourself to carpe momentum, seize the moment for the next day and get after it.
All right. So give your diet a plant shift. I found this discussion a bit interesting. Essentially, GQ says, seek out plant-based sources of protein like beans, including black, soy, fava, and lentils over meat. And when you're in the mood for an animal-based option, opt for 3 or 4 ounces serving of pork. Pork?
Yeah, I that was kind of interesting for me as well.
Pork, it's probably the worst meat product you can consume. And I know a lot of Americans aren't going to agree with me on that, especially as we look at bacon and all the other crap that seems to be put on. I don't know why you can't go to a restaurant, especially where we're at in Portland, where they have to put pork on everything. I got to put bacon on everything just to make it flavor. To me, that's a lazy chef that can't make the food savory enough on their own that they got to add the pig fat in order to add the flavoring. You know, pork is not a healthy meat. It's been linked to cirrhosis of the liver in some studies. I know that's very limited and so on, but there are far, far better choices of meat that one can have if they are opting to have some meat in their diet, which, you know, we had a discussion in class the other day about protein sources, and we talked about the challenges for the vegetarian trying to get adequate amount of protein into their diet. But we talked about this article and a little bit about the pork involved. But, you know, I would put, you know, probably top choice if you're really trying to look plant-based but get healthy meat source, I would go with a healthy fatty fish. I mean, here in the Northwest, I'd go with salmon, or I'd go with chicken breast, or I'd go with a lean cut of beef, or, you know, my go-to, if I could afford it and access it, my go-to meat source is buffalo. I would eat bison any day of the week if I could, because it's healthy, it's lean, and there's just so much good benefit to it. But pork, really?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned bison. I was going to mention bison. I love it. And I actually found there's a grocery store not too far up the road, and they sell bison and elk steak. And man, I got a freezer full of it right now, and it's delicious, and it's super lean and healthy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the taste of bacon, but there's no denying you are correct in the fact that pork is, it's obsolete when it comes to a protein source.
I'm not sure it was ever relevant as a protein source, but anyhow.
So find your crew. Why don't they just say maintain social connections to age well?
Oh, you mean under find your crew?
Mm-hmm.
It's GQ, you know, that's why. I mean, it's just for the heading purposes. And that's the important part is, you know, being socially connected. But I think there's also a point about having that quality connectedness. You know, we've had Jim Harshaw Jr. on the podcast in the past, and he talks about, the environment of excellence. It kind of goes back to the Jim Rohn quote about, you know, your five people that you're closest to. You know, you want that social connectedness where you have the people who are going to be the most supportive, the most connected to you socially and psychologically, that are going to help kind of push you along and not necessarily support everything you do, but keep you kind of in line, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Well, because, you know, a lot of people, they call themselves friends, but they're really acquaintances. I feel like with friends, they're going to hold you accountable for your actions, and they're going to lovingly kind of check you. They're going to be like, what are you doing? You know, and they're going to push you to be a better version of yourself, and you're going to get that support. Especially, you know, like you mentioned, your top five. Well, those top five, you should be constantly growing and learning and pushing each other to be the best version. And if someone's slacking in that, then as a friend, why wouldn't you want to call them out, right?
Okay, so abide by the 80% rule. What is the 80% rule?
The article says researchers found that people in the blue zone eat their smallest meals in the late afternoon or early evening. Then they don't eat any more for the rest of the day. This falls under what's called the 80% rule, which recommends people stop eating when their stomachs are 80% full.
That's confusing. I get the idea that we are to should stop eating when our stomachs are 80% full, but quote, eat the smallest meal in the late afternoon or early evening, then don't eat any more the rest of the day, end quote. That reads to me as, well, Let's just say my high school English teacher, Mrs. Moore, would not like the sentence. The idea of eat the smallest meal in the late afternoon or early evening and don't eat any more the rest of the day. Well, when are you eating that? I mean, it just doesn't make sense when they're talking about eating 80%. So are they saying essentially intermittent fasting that you should not eat and then have a small meal at the end of the day and then not eat any more? It's just not super well phrased. And I think the important take home there is that when we do eat, we are not eating to total fullness. But we also, you know, we talk a lot about meeting your macros and planning your meals. I think if you plan your meal and you have determined this is how many calories I need, this is what macros I need, then there's a certain level of importance of eating that entire meal and not just stopping, but not going beyond what you have actually prepared. And so I see how it can be a component of these people living in the blue zones. Most people do not meal plan. Most don't prep their meals. Most eat probably three meals a day. But kind of, I don't know, just reading this, it sounds to me like you're eating a smallest meal. So that means I'm eating a large meal earlier in the day and then eating less as I get closer to the end of the day. And then, you know, when do we define early evening? It's just confusing to me. And I'm sure if I read the book, the full book on the Blue Zones, it might be a little bit more clearer what exactly they're doing. I just think the GQ article does a crappy job of expressing what it means to abide by the 80% rule. I think there's a certain level of sense of not eating to the point of fullness and, you know, eating smaller meals perhaps throughout the day and not eating a big large meal before you go to bed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just intermittent fasting is what it sounds like.
Well, that's not what they're saying there. They're not saying that the people who age well are intermittent fasting, because that wouldn't be implied in eat your smallest meal late in the afternoon or evening, early evening. If you're intermittent fasting, you're eating pretty much your only meal or your largest meal later in the day. You're not eating throughout the day. And so it is a bit confusing, and I don't think it's supporting the concept of intermittent fasting.
Well, I mean, I don't know. To me, it kind of makes sense, because eat your smaller meal towards the end of the day. That way your body has enough time to break it down, and you're not dealing with all that insulin spike, because there'd be less of it. But then you go the rest of the time frame from sleeping, it doesn't even mention breakfast. So that to me kind of sounds like intermittent fasting. Like there's a window of when you're taking in your meals, right?
No, they're not speaking at all about a window, because again, you're eating your smallest meal late afternoon, early evening. That means you're eating your larger meal earlier in the day. And so that does not at all imply intermittent fasting. It just means, more than likely, I think what they're talking about is that in many of these blue zones, the lunch is probably the largest meal of the day, which is pretty common in a lot of cultures where they have a very large lunch. Maybe they take like a little bit of a siesta or a rest in the afternoon after that big meal, and then they'll have a smaller meal in the evening. And then, you know, kind of that's late evening, and then you're working towards sleep. But it's not intermittent fasting at all. I think they're just basically saying larger meal should be probably in the middle of the day. Mm. And then not having that big meal at dinner. Because Americans tend to eat a very large dinner, and sometimes we eat a very large breakfast and a very large lunch, and that's why obesity is such an issue. But I think in this case, what we're talking about is having a lighter, smaller meal in the evening and having probably a heavier meal sometime earlier in the day.
That makes sense. All right. So put your loved ones first. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I would agree, but with some limits.
Limits?
Well, we have talked before about the idea of being other-centered. One of my mantras, in fact, is I am third, from Gail Sayers' autobiography. It comes from the quote, "My God is first, my family is second, and I am third." I extend it to my family and friends. Sometimes, though, we can begin to feel like we are doing everything for everyone else and not getting enough or getting anything in return. So selflessness can lead to selfishness if we don't take time for self-care. And I think one of the important things to consider is when we're putting loved ones first, it's from a standpoint of caring for other people, but not forgetting that we need to have some level of self-care.
Yeah, no, and I like the I am third mentality because, you know, I've mentioned before, I've been going on my own little spiritual journey and my walk with Christ and putting that relationship first and foremost carries forward into other relationships. So if I put that relationship with God first, then I put my relationship with my family, my friends, my loved ones, and then myself third, I personally have seen a huge change in my overall life and well-centeredness. And it's a really, really cool concept. And it's one of the greatest mentality mindsets that change that I've made personally.
Yeah, I love how the article reads, "Investing time in your family is something that not only pays off emotionally, but in terms of longevity as well. Successful centenarians keep aging parents or grandparents nearby, commit to a life partner, and if they have children, they make an effort to spend time with them." I'm not sure there are centenarians with aging parents or grandparents.
You never know. I mean, yeah, you're probably right, though. Well, surely they mean that people who keep aging parents or grandparents nearby, commit to a life partner, and spend time with their children age well.
I believe you are correct, and don't call me Shirley. Power number 8 is find a place you belong.
So the article states that research shows that attending a faith-based service 4 times per month could add 4 to 14 years of your life expectancy. Now, I'm not sure of the original source, but...
Yeah, I kind of researched into that a little bit more because there's a link in the article, and it basically links to another article by Dan Buettner, the original author, and it basically says the same thing. So there's no link to the actual research, but I think there is a fair amount of evidence out there that have come across over the years that does indicate that attending a faith-based service, having a place where you belong, is going to add to your life expectancy. And the last power is know your why. And again, that article that is linked, Dan Buettner, refers to this simply as purpose. I would add as well, know your why not.
Ooh, that was the topic of your talk with Sandy Griffith in episode 137.
It was. I think we can often perceive a purpose, but we find excuses why we can't fulfill it.
Why can't we fulfill it, though?
Well, because we have excuses why we can't. You know, I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I'm not educated enough. Or, you know, my kids take up too much of my time. I mean, the why nots generally override our whys. I mean, we know why we want to do something. You know, it's like, I want to help the world, or I want to make the world a better place, but I can't because I'm only one person. And, you know, I can't do it. I don't have enough influence. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
So it's kind of like, it goes back to that old quote, losers make excuses and winners make it happen.
I guess. Or the Spencer Lee quote, excuses are for wusses. But
I mean, we all have an excuse. Life doesn't give really any fair shots to anyone. But if we have a goal or a passion, we should try and prioritize that and figure out a way to not let the excuses or the obstacles get in the way of us reaching or attaining that goal, right?
That idea of not getting or not having kind of the tools in place to succeed is, to me, a bit of nonsense. I think we're all given, and this is kind of my perception of purpose, is that we are put in the circumstances that we're put into to be able to develop the skills, the talents, and the wherewithal to be able to fulfill that purpose. And so when we say that, you know, we are in a limited situation, that just opens the door for those why nots to just come in.
That's kind of like having attitude with gratitude, right? Gratitude with two T's. Instead of complaining about the situation that you're in, be grateful for it and have that mindset of, man, this situation doesn't necessarily suck. This situation is actually prepping me for that next level of where I'm supposed to be. It's allowing me to acquire a skill set or develop something that I didn't have, and now I'm going to have it.
I think if our situation doesn't suck, we don't have any growth, because, you know, it's the whole overload principle. If we're not challenged beyond what we are accustomed to, there's no adaptation. And so, you know, it's easy to say my situation sucks and there's nothing I can do about it, rather than why does my situation suck? What am I supposed to get out of this that's going to allow me to move toward that purpose?
So in conclusion, move naturally, say yes to happy hour, take time to downshift, give your diet a plant shift, find your crew, abide by the 80% rule, put your loved ones first, find a place you belong, know your why, and of course, by doing all of this, you will
age well.
Thank you for listening. I hope you benefited from today's podcast, and until next time, keep aging well.